ahead and get started with the 3 minutes reserved for rebuttal. Ms. Dunn-Perio, you may start when you're ready.
May it please the court. Brittany Dunn-Perio for the Commonwealth. The trial court erred when it granted the motion to suppress all of the evidence because law enforcement executed a lawful investigatory stop. First, the police had reasonable suspicion that Slukey was the armed robber. And this has not been on cross appeal or anything. Slukey closely matched the description of the suspect, including his attire. And Slukey was located where a witness said the suspect would be located, which was only a few blocks away from the store. Second, the police also used appropriate force to detain Slukey during the investigatory stop. Law enforcement's use of handcuffs and a taser in this case was reasonable under the circumstances. The use of handcuffs was reasonable because Officer Kelly was aware that the suspect of the armed robbery was carrying a firearm. Additionally, Slukey was carrying a suspicious bundle, which was wrapped in a black sweatshirt, and the armed robber's description also included having a black sweatshirt. Officer Kelly handcuffed Slukey to maintain safety of the police officers, bystanders, Slukey, and also to maintain the status quo. Additionally, the use of a taser was also reasonable under the circumstances because Slukey did not immediately submit to the officer's commands to put his hands behind his back. The officers told Slukey at least three times to put his hands behind his back, and he did not. And the officers also told him that if he did not put his hands behind his back, that he would be tased. Slukey's refusal to comply with the police's orders to put both hands behind his back created a situation in which the officers needed to tase Slukey in order to handcuff him to maintain everyone's safety.
Counsel, can you address the issue of obstruction of justice and probable cause for obstruction of justice?
Yes.
Based on the facts and taking into account the factual findings by the trial court?
Yes, I can. So the trial court looked at the testimony of several police officers and also of the body cam camera. And the trial court said that the testimony of the officers was that the officer said that Slukey put both of his hands in front of him and tensed his arms up. But when you look at the body camera, we know that's not the case. And that's incorrect. There were two officers that testified about Slukey's arm. The first one was Officer Kelly, and that's where I believe he was the officer who had that specific body camera on. And Officer Kelly explained several times that he attempted to grab Slukey's left arm and rotate it behind him, but he could not gain control of his left arm at the time. And that Slukey was attempting to turn away with the bundle under his arm and was attempting to turn his side of the body away from Officer Kelly, and that his body became stiff and rigid. And that was on pages 61 and 119 and 120 of the appendix. And this was also repeated elsewhere as well. And this testimony is consistent with what we can see in the video, and that tensing up, that resistance, that putting the left side of the body away from the officer, all of that is enough for probable cause for obstruction of justice.
So this is Judge Beals. So Ms. Dunn-Perio, when the trial judge says on page 212 of the appendix, there was testimony that his arm was tense, and the witness who testified to that said both arms were forward and tense, the video does not reflect that as being accurate. Your argument is that because we can see the video, the trial judge is just plainly wrong on that.
No. Sorry. No. So there was the other officer that testified was Officer Ellerby, and she arrived at the scene later. And she did testify that both hands were in front of Lukey, was keeping both hands in front of him. But then you also have the testimony of another officer whose body camera it was, saying that it was only the left arm, and that also the body cam video reflects Officer Kelly's testimony, if that makes sense.
So are you saying that even with the trial judge's factual findings, that the body cam and other evidence shows other methods of obstruction of justice?
Could you please repeat that?
Well, we're just trying to figure out your argument here. So, based on your response to Judge Beal, I'm trying to figure out if what you're saying is that, because we're bound by the factual findings of the trial judge.
Right.
And clearly the trial judge made factual findings here. It seems to me that what you might be saying, and I'm just trying to verify this, is that even if we take the trial judge's factual findings, that there are other facts in the record to support obstruction of justice.
Yes, the obstruction of justice, I believe so. The obstruction of justice occurred, or there's probable cause for the police to believe that obstruction of justice had occurred, based on what was actually seen in the video and then on the testimony of Officer Kelly, which was not addressed by the trial court.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. And that would be the stiffening of the body and keeping that left arm and left side away from the police officers after, as you can hear in the video, the police officers gave him multiple commands to put the arms both behind his back and then to ultimately drop the bundle or else he'd be tased. So back to the Terry stop, the search of the bundle was reasonable under the circumstances, because Terry does not restrict an investigatory stop just to the person. And here,
now, what case law do you have, counsel, to support that?
Jones and also Michigan v. Long, which I believe Jones cites Michigan v. Long.
Thank you.
So, yes. So here the purpose of searching the bundle was to permit the officer to conduct his investigation without encountering a violent response. And because the officers reasonably suspected that Saluki was armed and dangerous, there's a real fear that if they had just released Saluki without searching that sweatshirt bundle, he could have just retrieved the bundle and then shot at law enforcement or drawn his gun afterwards, and that's something that I think case law is trying to prevent from happening to protect officer safety. And then lastly,
and your argument is, and just this is Judge Beals again, your argument is that under this particular factual scenario, that even though he was handcuffed at that point, that he could still perhaps have gotten to it. He was trying to slip the handcuff pretty soon after they put him on him. Is that your argument?
Yes. And also, if the police don't have an opportunity to look at it, in addition, once he is released, he could just go right back up and pick it up. And I believe that was the reasoning in the Jones case as why they found that searching a bag was allowed in that case.
Is there a distinction between vehicle and person? Search of vehicle and search of person?
I think so, but in Jones it was about searching a bag It wasn't about searching the vehicle itself. And then, finally, Flukey's obstructive behavior, again, it gave the police probable cause to arrest him. So anything that they found, like the knit cap, would have come in as a search incident to a lawful arrest. If there's no further questions, then I'd like to have my remaining time go towards rebuttal.
Okay, counsel. Judge Haley, do you have anything?
No, I do not. Thank you.
Judge Beals?
No further questions.
Okay, thank you. All right, Ms. Whitley, you will have 15 minutes. You may begin when you're ready.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Lauren Whitley with the Richmond Public Defender's Office on behalf of Mr. Saluki. We are, of course, asking the court to affirm the trial court's grant of Mr. Saluki's motion to suppress, specifically with regard to the trial court's finding here regarding Mr. Saluki's unconstitutional arrest. And I think that's really what the crux of the issue comes down to is the trial court here found that at the moment Officer Kelly put physical hands on Mr. Saluki and proceeded to attempt to handcuff him, that interaction had transitioned into a custodial arrest. And at that point, Officer Kelly did not have probable cause to arrest Mr. Saluki.
Ms. Whitman, this is Judge Haley. May I ask you a simple question, but a relatively long one? And here's my question. If the Terry stop was valid, as the trial court found, and if that stop granted the officer the right to search, including the bundle, for a weapon, and if the defendant resisted that right to search, did the defendant obstruct justice?
Well, and I understand the question is simple, Your Honor, but the answer is a little bit more nuanced. First of all, we are not conceding that the Terry stop was valid. I think for purposes of this appeal, we have not assigned cross appeal to that issue, and it's not the issue before this court. But, you know, hypothetically speaking, the problem for the Commonwealth here is that it is not simply automatic that an individual's belongings are searched in connection to a Terry stop. That is not a 1-2 punch that occurs.
Well, that wasn't my question. The question was, if the officer had the right to search, including the bundle, for a weapon, as here, and if the defendant resisted that right to search, did the defendant obstruct justice? I mean, he either did or he didn't, and I'd be happy to hear your view on why he didn't.
Right. Well, Your Honor, and I think it's, I mean, I guess from my perspective, I feel very, very strongly as an advocate that, you know, they had no right to search Mr. Saluki. I think in a hypothetical world, if an officer is in a lawful position and has a warrant to search an individual, for example, and that person resists the warrant, that arguably could be an obstruction of justice because the officer has a lawful position that they're pursuing, you know, in means of a lawful investigation.
I don't mean to pursue the matter, but my question assumes that the officer had the right to search for a weapon.
Right. Right. And in that scenario, I think that there could be an obstruction of justice. But that is, I would argue, Your Honor, is not the facts that are presented before this court in this particular case. So, you know, my example is if there was a warrant to search, then certainly someone resisting that could be charged with obstruction of justice. However, what we have here is not even a pat-down search. We don't even have the officers engaging with Mr. Saluki in the scope of a permissible Terry stop encounter. What we have and what the trial court found was an arrest and then a search incident to arrest, and that arrest there was not probable cause to arrest Mr. Saluki. And I think what's significant, I'm sorry.
No, excuse me. I have a bit of a cold and I cough. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. I wanted to leave room for questions. You know, I think what's significant here, particularly since this is a Commonwealth appeal, is that the trial court did make a number of factual and credibility findings in this case. And he did rely very heavily on the video that was submitted, and he made some statements about some of the testimony that he heard that contradicted what he saw, as he stated, with his own eyes in the video. And I think this court has to view, then, the officer's testimony through those credibility determinations by the trial court. And certainly there were a number of instances where the officers, including Officer Kelly, that the trial court found were not consistent with the video. For example, Officer Kelly testifying that Mr. Saluki was sweating profusely. The trial court specifically found that not to be true. Ms. Officer Kelly testifying about the color of Mr. Saluki's pants on the day that he was detained and arrested. The officer found that not to be accurate. The trial court found the officer's testimony not to be accurate. And certainly going to, you know, the stiffening of the arms in front. And that is important because, one, I think when this, Your Honors, having reviewed the video or looking at the video is very clear that this is a very quick interaction between the time Officer Kelly demands Mr. Saluki to put his hand behind his back and puts his hand behind his back, his right hand, and the time that he is tased, by my count, was approximately 15 seconds. Mr. Saluki is being told by two different officers simultaneously what to do. Put your hands behind your back, drop the bag. That's the backup officer Morley with the taser. That's Officer Kelly. He is never told what's being investigated, what he's being arrested for. And the trial court took all of those kind of factors in reviewing the video into consideration, as well as the fact that when he makes that specific finding about the arms not being yanked away or tense, finding that witness to not be credible with regards to the video evidence that he viewed, he makes a note that the left arm, you know, you can't see the arm that's holding the bag for a period of time. But at that point, he had made credibility determinations about the officer's testimony.
Just a couple of questions about this. First of all, you said you weren't really conceding reasonable suspicion at this point, but the trial court found that there was a basis, a reasonable suspicion for the Terry stop, correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
And that is not challenged in this appeal, correct?
We have not assigned a cross. That's correct.
Correct. Okay, so my next question is, the law permits an officer who is making a lawful Terry stop to handcuff a defendant under appropriate circumstances. Is that correct?
When that complete restraint is reasonable, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And so I imagine that what you're arguing is that handcuffing him in this context was not reasonable?
That's correct.
Okay, and you're basing that on what factors?
Well, Your Honor, I first point out that the two cases that the Commonwealth had relied on, there are additional circumstances which make the handcuffing necessary. And the trial court here did make a finding about that, specifically with regards to the officer's safety, not having to necessarily be as concerned about that because of the number of officers that were present. But in Campbell,
stop a minute. The video shows that at the time of the handcuffing, there were how many officers present?
There were, I believe there were three officers on surrounding Mr. Saluki at the time Officer Kelly put physical hands on him.
Okay, and they were looking for somebody who had robbed the convenience store at gunpoint, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. So the sole factor essentially for an armed and dangerous argument is that there is a report of a suspect who generally but not accurately matches Mr. Saluki's description who used a firearm in a robbery nearby. However, in other cases,
Ms. Whaley, this is Judge Fields. This is a little more than that, isn't it? I mean, you've got someone who is mostly in all black, as it was described, and that he's where the witness at the convenience store said he saw him going to, and the officer finds him not, you know, 3 days later or 3 hours later. He finds him within 3 minutes. So why isn't there a much stronger argument that this guy is armed and dangerous because he was just seen, or someone closely fitting his description was just seen robbing a convenience store with a gun?
Well, Your Honor, we're missing a lot of factors that are present in other cases where citizens' complete liberty is deprived by handcuffing during a Terry stop. So, for example, Mr. Saluki does not run from the police. He is cooperative. He comes out of the glass doors of the apartment building. He answers the officer's questions. He is not inconsistent. That was a factual finding by the trial court in his answers. He is not furtive with his gestures. The officer actually testifies the specific things he has been trained to look for in determining if someone is lying. Mr. Saluki does none of those things. He answers him looking him in the eye. One of the things that the trial court notes specifically is that his description is not a full match to the very generic description that was given. As far as the witness who testified
that description, regardless, the trial court found that there was reasonable suspicion for the stop.
That's correct.
So we really don't dispute the description at this point.
Well, and I think, Your Honor, though, we're talking about when then does it translate to a report of the use of a firearm in the commission of a crime, of a suspect to the individual being stopped, being armed and dangerous. Mr. Saluki is not seen with a gun. No one testifies he is known to carry a gun.
He's coming out with this on this really hot day with something in his arm, some sort of clothing, and then a bag inside of that, and he's cradling it in his arms. And he says it's food, and he wants to keep his food warm, but why can't an officer at that point, given the nature of what was just described as happening literally down the street, be concerned that this is someone who may shoot me? And we have case law that says that, you know, officers can essentially, they don't have to be willing to take the bullet. They can take precautions so that they get to go home to their families that night. So why in this situation isn't it perfectly reasonable to believe, given the way he's carrying that clothing in the bag and cradling it, that there may be a firearm in there?
Well, first, Your Honor, I point to the fact that the trial court specifically found there was nothing suspicious about that interaction. He said that there was nothing suspicious about him saying there was food in the bag. Mr. Saluki doesn't attempt to hide the bag or put it behind his back or reach into the bag. The video is very clear. He's actually, you can see his left hand holding it for the entire interaction in front of him with Officer Kelly. So we don't have those kind of traditional furtive or hiding gestures that this court has looked to in the past to find that an individual was sufficiently armed and dangerous to completely deprive them of their liberty, because that's really what we're talking about here during a Terry stop.
Ms. Whitley, I agree with you that the video clearly shows him being cooperative at the front end and it being very, very pleasant interchange between he and the police officer. They're chatting. He's explaining to the officer where he was. The place where he starts to get, I think, a little bit less, more argumentative is when the officer asks to see what's in the bag, which, if it were a consensual encounter, that might be a problem. But if it's a Terry stop, then the officer has a right to ask to see what's in the bag. He's trying to confirm or dispel his suspicion. And that's where the nature of the interaction starts to change, isn't it?
Your Honor, an individual on the street, just because they're engaged in a Terry stop with the police, does not have a lower protection from the Fourth Amendment. So I am certainly allowed as a citizen, when a police officer engages in a Terry stop with me and says, I want to ask you a couple questions, and he says, can I see what's in your backpack? I can say no. Under the Fourth Amendment, you can't do that without a warrant. Now, the officer may then be able to, you know, pursue other means of investigation. The officers here did not do that. One of the things, too, going back to Judge Fields, your question, at no time did this officer ask Mr. Saluki to put the bag down. That didn't occur until the backup officers arrived on scene, and I would argue, you know, made kind of simultaneous demands of Mr. Saluki. He is allowed to say, and the trial court specifically noted this, you cannot search my things. Nothing in Terry says that an individual on the street has to comply with the search of everything that he's carrying or his person. It says that if the police find there's reasonable, articulable suspicion that someone might be involved in criminal behavior, they can stop, detain them, and if they find the individual is armed and dangerous, they can then engage in a pat-down for weapons. That is
Ms. Whitley, Ms. Whitley, I'm sorry to, it sounded like I'm shouting. I'm just trying to get a word in edgewise. I'm just trying to get a word in edgewise. But the officer asked what was in the bag. He didn't say, I mean, he didn't pull the bag from him. He just asked him what was in the bag. And that's when the defendant said, food. Then he said, well, can I see? Right? Is that the sequence?
Right.
Okay.
Right. And at that point, I believe Mr. Saluki's answer was something to the effect of, what does it matter what it is? Right.
Right.
So, I mean, essentially saying, you know, no, you can't see what's in my bag. And I think that the trial court was very correct in the law in saying there's nothing wrong with a citizen in that interaction saying, no, you can't look inside my bag, just like you can't look inside my house or inside or without probable cause or without a warrant or some other legal means. And I think that Mr. Saluki, from his position, was well within his rights during that interaction, even assuming it's a Terry interaction, to assert those continuing Fourth Amendment rights that he had as a citizen and continues to have.
Ms. Whitley, your time is up. I think Judge Beals has a question, and then if you could quickly conclude since you're over time.
I just wanted to follow up on because you were talking about the factual issues here, and we were moving into the obstruction of justice assignment of error. And the trial court says at, on page 212 of the appendix, I don't think what we saw rises to the level of obstructing of justice. And then, not the next sentence, but the sentence after that, he then says, the court finds that there was no probable cause for the arrest. Why isn't his standard wrong here, that he's deciding that? Because he doesn't have to find that there's obstruction of justice. It doesn't have to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. He just has to, there just has to be probable cause of obstruction of justice, right?
That's correct. But I think he was, Your Honor. I would argue the transcript shows he is applying the appropriate standard. He finds two specific factual findings about the lack of probable cause. He talks about the lack of evidence of the arms stiffening or tensing or pulling away, and then he talks also that the fact that Mr. Saluki was in the process of complying. He said right before he was tased, I'm going to put it down, and the trial court specifically noted that. So I think the trial court was pointing out the lack of evidence at all of obstruction of justice to then support his finding that probable cause did not exist for the arrest. So I guess my reading of the transcripts, I would argue, shows the court did apply the appropriate standard. And I think he understood what the law was with regards to that interaction that was occurring.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Whitley. Judge Haley, do you have any further questions?
No, thank you.
And Judge Beals?
No further questions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Whitley. Okay, Ms. Dunn-Perriot, you have, by my calculations, 4 minutes.
So on the issue of obstruction of justice, I wanted to be clear that even if there was an unlawful detention, there still is no right to resist a seizure. So additionally, even though the interaction was quick, it still was enough to constitute obstruction of justice or have probable cause for obstruction of justice. And I believe the trial court did apply the incorrect standard. I believe the trial court was looking at it through a sufficiency standard instead of whether there's the probability or substantial chance of criminal activity. And so that is part of why the judge's ruling on whether or not there's probable cause for obstruction of justice is wrong.
Counsel, what's your response to Ms. Whitley's point that the defendant, even in a Terry stop, is allowed to say, you can't see what's in my bag?
So I think the Commonwealth does not believe that in every Terry stop, the police can automatically search belongings. But this case is different because here there was a reasonable suspicion that Lukey was armed and dangerous, and there's a reasonable suspicion that he was the suspect for an armed robbery. So I think that's a very different situation than just your run-of-the-mill Terry stop or like simple possession of marijuana kind of thing.
Well, so are you suggesting that the case law distinguishes between minor crimes and major crimes, or violent crimes and minor crimes?
The case law I came across really seemed to focus a lot on whether there's reasonable suspicion that the suspect was armed and dangerous. So I think that's the main factor.
Well, that's the standard, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But here they legitimately thought that he had a firearm on him. He was found just minutes after the robbery occurred and was found in close proximity to that store as well.
What is the distinction that you make in Jones? Didn't the officer frisk the bag before looking inside the bag in Jones?
I believe so. And here the officer took the bag and felt that it was weighted and recognized immediately that it wasn't food, like Lukey had said.
So it couldn't have been my mother's 20-pound lasagna in the bag.
I think under the circumstances, that police officer was best able to determine what it was, and it didn't feel like food to that officer.
Okay, counsel, you're into your end of your, you've got about 30 seconds.
Okay, and then the last thing I wanted to highlight was that police officers in a Terry stop don't have to ask questions. They don't have to fully explain why they are doing an investigation. So the idea that the officers should have said, excuse me, I'm investigating you because you have, because I think that you are armed and dangerous and you are a robbery suspect, is not practical and creates a very dangerous situation for officers. So if there are no further questions, I ask that the court reverse the trial court's suppression rulings and remand consistent with this court's findings.
Thank you, counsel. Judge Haley, do you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Judge Beal?
No further questions.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted now, and the court will reconvene for conference. Thank you both.